So join the Lunchtime crowd and listen to Culture City Radio Wednesday from noon to 2 on the only station making waves, WHFR 89.3 FM in Dearborn and on the web at WHFR.FM.
And I am Madman Glaze.
And we host a show called The Right Balance.
Every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon.
We play all forms of rock, including some electronica. And it's on the only station that is making waves.
WHFR.FM. Enjoy.
Oh!
You are round MVP.
Yeah, man! Yo, Drew, I finally got round MVP. Round MVP.
No way. That was some ownage. It's a good thing you got me as your wingman.
Right. You mean when you threw that flash grenade at me?
Whatever, man. Huge round. Seriously, great stuff.
Finally earning round MVP takes determination. So will getting into college. I've got what it takes.
All right, class. I'm going to pass back your tests. And a high score goes to... Brian.
Oh, yeah. High score, baby.
Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
For more information in Michigan, visit knowhowtogomichigan.org. That's knowhowtogomichigan.org.
The following is an encore presentation of Metaphysically Speaking.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and this month my special guest is Mishi LeMay, and she is a clinical psychologist and metaphysical healer. And I just want to say good afternoon, Mishi. How are you?
Great. And how are you doing?
I'm doing well so far. Now, I know that you're a metaphysical healer and you're involved with many modalities, but today, to start with anyway, we'll concentrate on Reiki. Now, what is Reiki?
Reiki is a Japanese way of invasively healing with energy. For example, some people think that the Christ actually used this form of healing when he healed others with laying on of hands.
Mm-hmm. Is there any basis in fact for that? I mean, is that what the Bible says? Is that how it's been interpreted, or how?
Well, that's what some people say, interpret it as.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get interested in Reiki?
Well, when I was younger, I used to put my hands on the kids that I knew, and they would heal or feel better, and they would line up outside the gate to our backyard and take their turns.
Mm-hmm. And were you charging people back then or no?
Actually, a lot of them brought a little token, whether it was a Bible made out of a piece of soap that they did in Sunday school, or a piece of jewelry, or a doll, something like that.
Really? No candy or popsicles or anything like
Wasn't
that?
Wasn't into candy.
No? Oh, okay. So you've been a healthy eater all your life, is that it?
Mostly.
Okay. Well, good for you. Well, when you did Reiki as a child, obviously I would think that you didn't really know what it was. You just knew that it was the right thing to do and that it helped people?
Yes. I actually did Reiki, not knowing what it was, until I was about 13 when some friends of mine said, yeah, you might not want to do this. People think you're pretty weird now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped so I could fit in, which was probably not the right thing to do. Now that I'm older, I know that it's natural to be able to heal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I know that happens to a lot of my guests. They're looked upon as being different, to say the least. And sometimes, whether it's family or friends who ridicule them or make comments like you're talking about, you know, say, don't do that or whatever, then they stop. And it's like you're saying that they wish they would have just progressed and kept working at it. But again, peer influence is important. Family influence is important. And when you're young, you're going to be affected by that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So with these children, what would you do? I mean, how would you help them? I mean, was it be just the fact that you were putting your hands on people or near them and you were taking away their pain, or what exactly were you doing?
It depended on the kid. If they had a cut, maybe I'd put my hands around their cut and they'd start healing a little faster, or if they just were sad, same thing, kind of around. It all depended on the case, but it was amazing. I could just feel this energy run through me and into them. It's like whatever they needed was there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't directed by me in mm-hmm. a way.
Right.
And that's part of what Reiki is also. It's not directed by the individual healer. It's from source and goes right through you and goes where it's needed.
Mm-hmm. So intuitively, you knew where to place your hands. I mean, if somebody complained about a pain, maybe you didn't put your hands there. Maybe you put it at a different place in order to help them.
Yes. Whoever felt right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even now, if somebody says that, say they got a headache, it might not actually originate in their head. It might be more emotional and originates in stomach, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So just where the pain is might not be where the Reiki needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do Reiki, you say you don't actually touch people. You just put your hands over certain areas that you're there to work with.
I tend to not touch people. Other practitioners do. I occasionally have a client that says, I feel it works better if you put your hands on me. And so for most areas, I'll be careful in others. I'll do that for them. But generally, you don't need to, or at least I don't need to, put my hands on the person physically.
Mm-hmm. Now, is Reiki, that's Japanese, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The theory is, history-wise, and I'm not great at pronouncing his name, Mikhail Ursi, I think it's pronounced, brought it back here around 1940s-something. He mm-hmm. got his knowledge. And his story is an amazing story. He decided to meditate and went in solitude up on a mountain, meditated, and he was there for 21 days and had a stone pile of 21 little stones. So each day he would take a stone off. On the 21st day, apparently he saw a beam of light coming towards him. And he thought, oh gosh, I gotta get out of the way. Of course, this is handed down through centuries or years. And then he said, wait a minute, I'm just going to stay here. And that's when he received the Reiki and the knowledge of how to do Reiki. So then he went down the mountain and he had some miracles happen, like stubbing his toe and putting his hands on it and healing the cut. The first farmhouse he went to, apparently he asked for food, and after not eating for 21 days, he ate this full, huge meal, and usually you'd get sick. He didn't get sick at all. So he had some miracles like that happen right afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this in the United States or Japan?
No, this was Japan.
Mm-hmm. So this was right after World War II?
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I'm not quite sure about that. I'm more a practitioner than a historian.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I would think that, you know, it'd be like after the war that Americans would be somewhat safe over there anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know. So when you develop this, would you say it's a gift or not necessarily?
It can be.
Okay. Well, would you describe it as a gift then? If you're able to do it?
Nowadays, I would describe it as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are so wanting healing. They pull at you. And even when you say, that's enough for today, they continue on to go, well, if you're in a crowd, then that can become a problem. Mm-hmm. So it can be a gift, and it can be, being the weird one and cursed, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when you work on somebody, do you suggest, if they're really complaining about chest pains or something like that, would you suggest that they actually go to a doctor first to get a diagnosis and then come to you for some further help?
Absolutely. Before I start working on someone, I ask about their history. Mm-hmm. Why they're there, if it's for pain like that. Have they seen a doctor? What's the doctor info? I usually get a release of confidentiality so the doctor and I can talk and collaborate to help the client.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that doctors are more open to this type of modality lately?
It depends on the doctor, totally.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you get some resistance still from doctors that this is just a bunch of hogwash?
Some don't even return my call, but really? I've done my best.
Mm-hmm. So you just have to go by what the patient tells you at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to be able to work with a doctor, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. So if you worked with a doctor, what would you work out with the doctor? Just a certain mm-hmm. program on what you should concentrate on as far as healing a certain part of a person's body?
Usually, this is where my different modalities come in to play. Usually I will work with the doctor on what he perceives is happening. If you've read Louise Alhay's book, You Can Heal Your Body, most physical dis-ease is caused from our own emotional dis-ease. And so everything is connected. Talking with the doctor, I get the idea of what he feels the physical aspect is. Then I work with the client on the emotional and spiritual aspect. So I can do some Reiki. If they're in pain and the doctor says, you know what, I know what's happening, I might do some hypnosis to reduce their sense of the pain. If it's cancer, you can do hypnosis on reducing the cancer, along with Reiki. So it all depends on what's going on with that individual, how I will work with the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you do Reiki? I've heard of some people actually doing it on the phone or over the phone. Do you do anything like that?
I tend to not. Mm-hmm. I have done long-distance Reiki, where a client will come in, say, and their son is ill, and he's in California. And I use a teddy bear, pretend the teddy bear is his body, the symbolic physicalness of him, and work on the teddy bear.
Okay. So in essence, you're still working with something. You're just not, imagining mm-hmm. that person in California, but you have mm-hmm. something. Now, if a person is in California and you have this teddy bear here in Michigan, and it's a certain part of a human anatomy, would mm-hmm. you work on that same area on the
yes.
teddy bear?
Yes, you use the teddy bear as a symbol.
Mm-hmm. Like a surrogate, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. And if you don't happen to have one, it's perfectly reasonable to be at a picture in your mind. You don't need the teddy bear either.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm camping and I don't have a teddy bear and a camper wants some Reiki for their child at home because they just discovered, hey, there's a Reiki healer, I'll still work with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. You don't shut anybody out necessarily. Mm-hmm. I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And my special guest this month is Mishi LeMay. She is a clinical psychologist and metaphysical healer. Right now we're talking about Reiki primarily. Now, did you go and receive any special training for Reiki? I know you did it as a child without having any idea of what it was. But when you got older, did you study with somebody to learn Reiki?
Yes. Actually, about 4 years ago, a friend of mine said, hey, let me read your cards, a tarot reader. Said, you know what? It looks like you should learn Reiki. I'm going, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. I got my first, second, and third degree. So I'm a Reiki master at this point.
Mm-hmm. So the third degree is the highest you can go?
There's different schools of thought, but basically, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not like getting a black belt or anything like that, right?
No.
I mean, no. You just, do you get a degree or something? I mean, there's...
You get a certificate.
Uh-huh.
And it, the certificates flow through the hierarchy from Yuseo.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Do you teach it yourself?
I have not taught it yet. I've been asked to, and I'm currently developing a class for that.
Mm-hmm. So when your friend that's the tarot card reader suggested you take up Reiki, were you surprised? I mean, you really weren't aware of what it was at the time?
I was aware of what it was. I read Brennan's books,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally slipped into the, oh gosh, let me help you, and, oh, you're healed. Okay. So I knew a little bit about Reiki, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, heck, life is an adventure. Who do you recommend I learn it from? And so I did.
Right. Just live it up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you started to learn about Reiki, did you think back to your childhood and realize that at that time that's what it was you were doing?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And regretted a little tiny bit that I had given it up for a while.
Mm-hmm. But once you got back to Reiki, you knew you were on the right path, so to speak?
Yes. And there's all, you know, with Reiki, you can take it anywhere. You don't need special tools.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an incredible gift.
Mm-hmm. So you don't need any special music or a special resting area, anything like that, a special mat, nothing?
No. I am starting to incorporate crystals,
mm-hmm.
and have had pretty some success. It's just very, very recent I've used crystals.
Mm-hmm. Do you pass the crystals over a person's body, or do you just hold the crystal as you're working with them? How does that work?
I place the crystals where I think they need to go and what type.
Mm-hmm. And I know there are different crystals that have different properties, so you use different crystals depending on what the problem is that person is experiencing?
I go with intuition, so while I have an idea what crystal might go with that, say the chakras,
mm-hmm.
I mean, most people who would listen to the station would know what that is, so... Most chakras have a few stones that would apply to them. Yet, if two are connected, I might use the stone, say blue agate, that I would normally use for the throat. I might also use that for the third eye,
mm-hmm.
or the heart, so they're more connected, if that's what I'm guided to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you work with people, is it primarily trying to heal, well, I don't know, I guess certain things that are really wrong with them if they've been sick, or can it just be a general well feeling that you want to provide for that person that, you know, gives them a sense of well-being on a daily basis?
Yes, you can, and I do, actually use Reiki not just for, like, physical dis-ease or pain. I also use Reiki for anxiety, very good for anxiety, depression, because everything is connected. And so Reiki is deep healing. It goes right to the energetic, the energetic flow. What Reiki does actually is open up the blockages of the energetic flow of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so emotions are energy. Thoughts are energy. Our spirit is energy. Everything is energy, so it's all connected. Reiki touches on all those levels.
Mm-hmm. So there might be other benefits. I mean, you might be working on a particular injury with a person, but they might experience some type of healing in other ways?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like emotionally, would that
mm-hmm.
come into play?
Like if somebody has post-traumatic stress disorder and has, say, a head injury. Not only am I working on the head injury, yet I'm also working on the emotional trauma to
mm-hmm.
decrease that and allow them to work that through.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you suggest people help themselves somehow when they're on their own? I mean, do they do a form of Reiki on themselves when you're not there? Is that possible?
I ask them to.
Mm-hmm.
I go through a bit of the self, actually what a Reiki one would start with after attaining the Reiki one attunement, to do self-Reiki every night for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask my clients to do that because it also allows them to invest in themselves,
mm-hmm.
and continue the energy flow.
Mm-hmm. So depending on the severity of the injury or whatever it might be, there are different time frames involved, right? It might be a matter of months. How about years in working with a certain injury or a certain problem?
It could be years.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the person. And sometimes there's also emotional blockages that the person is not quite ready to give up that injury.
Mm-hmm.
It's some kind of protection that they perceive saves them from dealing with something else.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's where hypnosis, psychotherapy, self-acceptance healing comes into play.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't really use Reiki to, say, help somebody lose weight or to stop smoking or anything like that. That would be more of the hypnosis thing, correct?
I would start with hypnosis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Reiki wouldn't, like I said, help somebody lose weight necessarily.
I would say that nothing is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what they want to do and what that's what their intent is, I think our intention makes our reality.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, sometimes from what I've heard, if a person really is obese, it kind of gets back to what you're saying is it really is a type of protection against the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if they hang on to certain injuries or whatever, for whatever reason, if it protects them in some way that they think, you know, it protects them, then they wouldn't really believe in it, so that if you did work with that person, you probably wouldn't see any results. Is that true?
I would probably not see results yet. What the start of the result would be is that they would realize, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to give this up yet. I have had clients go, know what? I think I'm going to hang on to this for a little while longer. Let's work on the issue still.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly fine. Everyone is exactly where they need to be at this time.
Right. So you rely on feedback from your client on exactly what they want to do.
And exactly where they are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Everybody's along the path at different places, so they don't always want to do things that they're not ready for.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, when you work with people with Reiki, do you have them lie down and then, you put your hands over it and you just move it around? And how long does a session generally last?
Usually I have a client lie down.
Mm-hmm.
Some clients, if they can't, sitting is fine. There are certain hand positions, about 20, 22 of them. And so for a full session, each position takes about 5 minutes, although you go with your intuition. There usually will be, in my hands, some kind of vibration, hot, cold, some kind of sense. My client might or might not feel something. Everyone is different. And then when it's done, move on to the next position. So it varies, but they usually last about an hour.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, what's the length of time? I mean, I guess it depends on what problem you're working on, but does it take maybe a matter of a few weeks, a few months? There's no set time frame then, right?
There is no set time frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the client's ready, and it just goes like gangbusters. There's always something that happens, though, even if they don't realize it at that session. Like a couple days later or a week later, they go, you know, I really do feel X, and make another appointment.
Mm-hmm. Do you let them decide, or do you kind of guide them and say, well, I don't think we need to work on this anymore? Is there any of that?
It depends on the individual. Everyone's different. Some people, particularly those with low self-esteem, who aren't used to saying what they want or need, I might kind of guide them a little bit. If it's someone who's done some more work and they're like, oh, I think I want to come back. It's like, well, let's look at it. Do you really need to?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take a couple weeks, give me a call back, let's see where we go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't automatically usually make another appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I leave it with them.
Does it get to the point where people, I guess for a better, well, for lack of a better term, do they get addicted to the Reiki? I mean, they just feel like they really need it and they can't give it up at any time and they just want to keep coming back?
I think some clients do, particularly those that have an addictive quality to their personality.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, I'll work with them on the emotional addiction to anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it brings other things to the surface, which mm-hmm. allows us to work on a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a point where you've just flat out said, look, nothing personal, but I don't think we can work together anymore. I think I've taken you as far as I can. I think that you should at least work on yourself, maybe do Reiki on yourself. Have you ever had that experience?
Not yet.
Not yet, but it could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you foresee that sometime or not necessarily?
I foresee suggesting to them, if that were to happen, I would suggest to them that they learn Reiki themselves. And if I'm teaching at the time, teach them or send them to my mentor.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Mishi LeMay. She's a clinical psychologist and metaphysical healer. Right now, we're talking primarily about Reiki. Now, do you ever do Reiki on yourself? Is that something you do maybe on a daily basis or a weekly basis, anything like that?
I usually do it every night.
Mm-hmm. So what do? I mean, just kind of go over what aches and pains you might have and work on that, or is it just a general well-being type thing?
I do a general well-being type thing, starting from my head, going down, and then going down through the back, starting from the head, going down. And if I have a particular issue, I will periodically through the day do Reiki on that spot.
Mm-hmm. So you can just do it anywhere, anytime, basically?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you work on members of your family, anything like that? Are they pretty receptive to this, or are they just like, leave me alone, don't bother me?
I've worked a little bit on my son
mm-hmm.
and our cats.
Okay, well, yeah, I've heard cats. I've also heard plants as well. Have you ever worked with plants?
I haven't intentionally, although I rarely have a plant die on me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a gardener
yeah.
for a hobby, and my garden's amazing.
Yeah, so you've got a green thumb, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So you work on your son, your cats. What about your husband or any other members of your family? Are they open to that, receptive to that?
I have worked on one brother before,
mm-hmm.
Not recently. Not since becoming a Reiki master. He doesn't live in the state anymore, so I don't often work with him. But occasionally he calls and says, hey, you know, Mishi, can you? And I don't work on my husband. That is, he's not as receptive to it, although he's more the show me the proof.
Mm-hmm. More the scientist type. Yeah.
Yeah. So even if there is proof, you know, okay, they just, you know, they were on medication or something, didn't let you know.
Right. It just was a freak occurrence somehow.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, again, that's opposite the track, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he's more of the fact guy and you're more of the, you know, idea type person or feelings, I guess that's what draws people together sometimes, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So now, when you do Reiki, is it something where it really takes a lot out of you? Do you feel exhausted after doing it, after you've worked with the client, or do you feel rejuvenated, like you're really ready to go, you've got a lot of energy? How do you feel?
I feel awesome. Every time I do a Reiki treatment on someone, I receive Reiki at the same time.
Really?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, it sounds incredible. So it works both ways then.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So when you get done with the client, you feel rejuvenated, would you say?
I feel rejuvenated, great, my clearer, more intuitive, more present.
Mm-hmm. Right. So how many clients would you work with during a day, say, doing Reiki?
Boy, maybe depending on the personalities of the client, 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's pretty good. That's a good day's work, an hour mm-hmm. each client, yeah. Now, I know you do different modalities, and you say you combine all of them together at times.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just get the impression, I mean, when somebody comes to you for Reiki, that maybe they could also benefit from one of the other things that you do, and then you just incorporate that with them?
I talk about with them, see if they're open to it, and then yes, if they are.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other things you do? I know we talked about hypnosis, that you do that.
Mm-hmm. I do self-acceptance healing and psychotherapy, of course. I do spiritual counseling, a lot of spiritual counseling.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's the foundation of who we are, is our spirituality. I also have a homeopathic line, and I think that's about it.
Mm-hmm. So spiritual counseling, what do you mean by that?
I start by talking with them about their belief system and where they are and how they feel their connection with divine sources.
Mm-hmm.
And Reiki helps with that too. It is from divine source. It's a universal life flow. And then I go from there, because every person's different. Every session is different.
Mm-hmm. So when a person comes to you, do you just interview them and get a feeling for where they're at? And then from there, you decide on what type of modality to use on that person in conjunction with others? Or how does that work usually?
Usually people come to me knowing what modality they want to use with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with that. The first, for hypnosis, the first session is a little bit longer, usually an hour and a half, because I get a lot of history so I can incorporate it into the hypnosis. With other ones, we start by talking, and then I find out the history, where they feel they need to do the work. And then we go from there, based on what they came in, which modality they came in to utilize.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people just come to me because of curiosity. You know, I've never tried this modality. And so then we go from there.
Mm-hmm. But you also suggest different things, too?
If I feel it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And they apparently trust you, right, for the most part?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Have they ever balked at, I don't want to do that, I don't think that will help me? Has that ever happened to you before? Or are they
yes.
pretty open?
No, sometimes somebody comes in and goes, oh, I tried X before, and doesn't work on me. It's like, okay, it was a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel it doesn't work on them, chances are they will not let it work on them.
Mm-hmm. Right, they've already got that mindset that it's not going to work, and that's mm-hmm. their belief.
Right, I work a lot with patterns of belief.
Mm-hmm.
My undergraduate is in biochemistry and studied the brain quite a bit, and so I've always been fascinated with the connection between, like, I feel our brains are biocomputers, mm-hmm. and what's programmed in them at a very young age tends to be the main programming, and then we need to tweak it a little bit. If mm-hmm. for someone to be happy, their old programming doesn't always work for them as they get older.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that's where the hypnosis comes in? Maybe you can backtrack, go back further in their life to find out what some of the problems might be? Or do you actually even regress them to prior lifetimes to find out what the problem might be this lifetime?
I've done both.
Mm-hmm. And are they both effective?
Both are effective.
Mm-hmm. And how so?
A client that went through a past life just went, oh, so that's how I know my husband. No wonder I've got this issue with him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that the issue is there, she's not going to bump into it all the time. She can take that deep breath, lean back, go, oh, I know this issue. And the more that occurs, the faster it will occur, and eventually she'll work it through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there to support her working it through.
Right. But it could be the current lifetime as well, something that happened during childhood that affects them.
Yes. I had a client wanting to lose weight, and he remembered, oh, Every time my mom wanted my attention, she gave me food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's right. How she showed love. Okay. I remember that first time I realized that this chocolate pudding was it. And then he was able to change his eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently she gave him a huge amount, not just a small dab for a five-year-old.
Right.
A huge amount.
Right. Well, again, she probably equated that with love and thought mm-hmm. that she was doing a good thing as well.
Of course, it's a cultural thing in some cases too.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, it can be. So if a person comes to you and they want to do Reiki, but you feel that perhaps they would benefit from some of the other modalities that you use, would you start with the other modality first, or would you go ahead and do what the client wants, and then if you feel that it's best to work in other modalities, you suggest that?
I tend to go with what the client feels that they need. I believe that most people intuitively know what they need, and so they're drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the time, not 100% of the time, I will go with what the client comes in with. If there's someone that does have a psychological diagnosis that might not do well with hypnosis, and they come in for hypnosis, I would not do hypnosis with them first.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that, let me get to know you, let's work on in some other areas, let's approach it with, say, Reiki or psychodynamics or self-acceptance. Let's do something else besides hypnosis to get you to the place where we can do hypnosis,
mm-hmm.
if you still want to at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. So by being a trained psychologist, you feel that's really helped you in your metaphysical practice as well?
Yes. There's some truth in almost everything that comes across. And so I've been able to use psychotherapy to delve into the patterns and of thought and energy and how they're related,
mm-hmm.
and be able to assist the client in being their own guide to their own self-healing so that they're not seeing me forever.
Mm-hmm. Right. You want to self-empower them so that they can go out on their own and become healthy human beings?
Mm-hmm. And by them changing and transforming their vibrational rays, and everyone around them are also raised their vibration,
mm-hmm.
and so on, and so on. I allow my clients actually decide to go back to school to become therapists or social workers or go to learn Reiki themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you help people find their path? I mean, maybe they're confused on what they want to do in life. Do you kind of help guide them to pick the right path for them so that they will go out and get the job or career that they want or they should be in?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Not all the time.
Not all the time. Sometimes they want some clarity, and I'll assist them becoming clear with what they truly want. And sometimes they are still, particularly teens, are still like, they're unformed yet. There's not really a path I would encourage them to take yet, because they are just starting out on their adventure.
Mm-hmm. So you don't really guide them per se. You let them choose what it is they think they should be doing?
I guide them to become aware of their innermost thoughts and feelings, mm-hmm. and to allow that to guide them.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, I help guide them to where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with many teenagers?
I do work with quite a few teenagers.
Mm-hmm. And they come to you for assistance?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. As a teenager, I probably wouldn't even think about doing anything like this. I'm just kind of surprised that they would, you know, think that you could help them or that they could be healed with metaphysics or improve their mm-hmm. lives with metaphysics.
Yeah. Actually, a few years ago, I was approached by a couple of teens I was working with that went to the same high school to start a group. And so I was holding a group for them. And I do ask that the teens, if their parents don't pay for it, I only charge the teens like $10, sometimes $5, but they have to earn the money. So mm-hmm. they are invested in their own health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you charge them something to kind of learn responsibility.
I charge them something because if they're only taking and not giving, they can't actually receive and take it in. It's kind of like those stories you hear of somebody winning the lottery, and then a few years later, they're penniless again.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They haven't actually also given in order to receive and keep the money. Mm-hmm. So if I've got a client that's not willing to pay and think they are not worth their lives really improving, there's not this exchange going.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really stick.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk to them about self-love?
Mm-hmm. Of course. They are the ones, a lot of times teenage years are where they start to doubt that they're lovable.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, they're bombarded by so many different images on TV, computers, et cetera, and they think that sometimes they don't measure up. So they come to you in order to, I guess, find out what their place is in the universe as they're growing up?
And sometimes, despite parents' best intentions, they don't feel they're getting the love from their parents. And so they want to be able to talk to somebody they know is going to be non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest things of teens, is acceptance.
Right.
For who they are. And when I can accept them for who they are, they start accepting themselves for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then the healing starts.
Mm-hmm. So you can be open with them. You don't react like, oh my, you really did that? You know, like a typical parent might. I mean, you are a little more relaxed in that respect.
And if I'm going, oh my, I don't believe you did that, usually they're doing it with me. I don't believe I did this. Listen to this, Mishi.
Right. But it's not like, well, I've got to tell their parents or anything like that. I mean, it is all confidential you're working with people.
It's all confidential, I have to have the parents come in for the first session to sign,
mm-hmm.
sign that. It's confidential unless I feel a client might hurt themselves or somebody else, or they're being hurt and mm-hmm. or neglected.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do have to do something about that.
Right, if you really feel it's serious enough.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's good that the parents are on board then. Nobody is hiding anything in that respect.
Sometimes parents are not on board.
Really?
They will come in, sign the paperwork, and go, she's yours. And that's when usually I only charge
$5. Mm-hmm. Right.
A lot of times parents actually, if they allow themselves, their children are their greatest teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Their children will reflect them.
Right.
Usually by the age of 2, a person has chosen what parent they're going to reflect. Whether it's the powerful father who might be abusive, taking extremes here, or the mother who is soft and loving, but yet the victim. Usually by age 2, that programming is in that biocomputer, and they will act it out. And then they wonder why they're with, as an adult, let's say, we all know that children of alcoholics tend to be drawn to alcoholics.
Right.
Because that's the patterning that their little biocomputers took in first.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even though it might not be a healthy relationship, it's what they're used to.
It's what their subconscious mind says, oh, this is love.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wonder why they're not happy.
Right. So it's hard to break those patterns sometimes.
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use the word hard. It can be strange
mm-hmm.
when attempting and working on breaking those patterns to even recognize. That's a big aha for a lot of people. It's like it's like having a box in the middle of the floor. If you don't recognize the box, you keep bumping into it or rock around it. But once you pick up the box, go, oh, this is what it is. Wow. Now I've got a hold on it, and I can look through this box and work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can empty out the box, and it's no more.
Mm-hmm. Now, do parents bring their children to you? They've heard about you, and maybe they're having trouble raising their child. They might come to you and say, please help me. She's going nuts, or he's going nuts, and I need some assistance here.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes clients do, And I will ask if I can work with the parents, too. Mm-hmm. If a parent comes to me, they're already invested. And parents are the blueprint for their children. So I do really like to work with them on parenting skills and how to look at their patterns. Because, let's face it, a lot of us, when we're anxious because our child's not doing what we think they should do, we feel backed into a corner, and we do exactly what that programming originally was. We hear our parents' words coming right out of our mouths that we never wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's the amazing thing is, you know, as a youngster, you see your parents and experience them, obviously, as you're growing up, and you say to yourself, you know, I am never going to be like them. I'm going to be cooler or better or whatever. And then eventually you reach that point in your life where you'll say something and you'll stop and say, wow, that's something that my father would say or my mother would do or whatever the case may be. And it's like you reach that point where you say, wow, I have become my parents. How did that happen? It wasn't supposed to happen, but it often does.
Yes, and that can be an eye-opener.
Yeah, right. Well, again, it's trying to recondition people to, I guess, be open to different solutions, correct, or different ways of, I guess, interpreting their lives and their relationships.
And looking at the cycles or patterns that they get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that we're human. We make mistakes. Now, we didn't like what happened this time. How can we change it next time? Okay, so how are we going to, what do we think will happen if we do B? Okay, let's try B for a couple months and see what emotionally happens, what emotional shift there is. Because people in the whole family will get stuck in patterns. Children will act the way that they think their parents need them to act so the parent can act a certain way. It's a vicious cycle. So looking at the patterns and going, looking at them with love and gratitude, non-judgment, is key.
Mm-hmm.
And just go, oh, okay, so now that I know this is not the path I want to take, what do I want to do differently?
Mm-hmm.
What did I learn from this experience? It didn't make me feel good, so I don't want to go there again. This might make me feel good. If I do this next time, Joey doesn't want to put on his shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we kind of work with. And sometimes clients will even, the parents, go, you know, I remember my dad doing that. And this is how I felt. Wow, okay. I think I need to apologize to my child. Mm-hmm. And that's when some of the healing starts, with their own parents.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that their parents were doing their best that they knew at the time.
Right.
But now the parent that I've got, or the teenager, is going to break that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been going on for generations.
Right, exactly. Very briefly, I want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Mishi LeMay. She's a clinical psychologist and metaphysical healer. And I would imagine that there has to be a lot of trust between you and your clients, whatever modality that you choose to use, that you have to trust each other in order to, I guess, move forward in helping them, your clients, correct?
Yes. A huge part is the what is called the therapeutic alliance in psychology. Building up that trust. Some clients have never allowed them to trust themselves, to trust another person, because they feel they've always been betrayed by the people they trust.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is building it up, creating that area of safety energetically, physically, emotionally, for them to be their true selves.
Mm-hmm.
Say what's really on their mind, knowing that they're not going to be yelled at. They're not going to be hit. They are going to be like, oh, wow. So how do you feel about that? How old were you when you experienced that? Whatever comes up. And sometimes even people do start with Reiki or just mm-hmm. talking. I had one client that, wow, 3 or 4 months, just came in and talked and vented and finally felt safe enough to actually to work on some of the core issues.
Right.
Some issues are so deep they don't even come up until a couple months into therapy. Mm-hmm. If that's what we're doing. Sometimes an issue can come up while doing Reiki. A client will start crying. It's like, oh, well, you know, ask, so what you feeling? And they'll tell you, I remember being 5 and X happened. Mm-hmm. That gives me, then we can do a little bit there. Usually we'll wait till later on and have another session to work on it verbally.
Mm-hmm. So it probably helps being a psychologist in that if you hear something very shocking from one of your clients, you probably know how to deal with it to a certain extent rather than just being a practitioner of metaphysical sciences where you don't really have that training, but you do have the training so that you can really work with somebody and know if they need further help, they have to go to somebody else or something like that, right?
Yes. Very occasionally I will get someone who I feel could use the benefit of, say, a physical therapist, mm-hmm. or just want to check out with a psychiatrist that there's not something more going on than I think. Like a schizophrenic, I might want to go see a psychiatrist for a while and then work with the psychiatrist possibly to, as they grow and transform, to start easing off the meds.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had that occur too often. It's rare. Most people, I don't need to refer to somebody else unless it's like maybe I think they feel would do well with massage, acupuncturist. I have referred somebody to a biofeedback person. It all depends mm-hmm. on the individual. But if they need to be referred somewhere, I'll let them know.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel it's hard for people that come to you as clients to be honest with you at first?
I feel that they are as honest with me as they can be. Some clients' denial are so strong that they don't know that they're lying to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right, they believe whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. So I take my client for what they say, for what they're worth. Even if I have a intuition that something else is going on, I will guide my client to it. I won't, I think it's abusive to just say, oh, gee, you know, like we all know a few years back, sexual abuse was a big thing. To tell someone, oh, I think you've been sexually abused, is abusive and inappropriate. I would never do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they come in after a while and go, you know, I just had a memory, or I think then we might explore that. But I'm not going to push somebody where they're not ready to go emotionally
right.
or spiritually. It's just not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Or you wouldn't say, well, I don't think that's the case with you. I think this is what the situation is. You wouldn't do that again. You would listen to that person and then move them in the direction that you feel is best for the client.
Move them in. Okay, I don't remember ever telling a client that I didn't believe them type thing. Mm-hmm. That I don't think this is true. I'll do reality testing. So what makes you think this is true?
Mm-hmm.
Or what gives you the impression that this is true? And I do my best to have the teach the client to guide themselves in a way. I'm kind of a guide, yet I don't want to control my client. If they're really meant to go to B and I'm trying to guide them to A, I don't think I'm going to be helping that client very much.
Mm-hmm.
I go a lot by what they tell me and what they feel.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, you have to divorce yourself with, I guess, just your own ego that might get involved. You just have to be relaxed and open to what they're telling you and then react to that.
Yes, or act to it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that a lot of us react without thinking or feeling or even being awake. One of my low teens just a couple of days ago said, you know, I think my parents are asleep. They're just sleepwalking through life. It's like,
yeah. That could be true. Who knows?
And, you know, she realized that what she's doing is what she feels is waking up. And that's part of my job.
Mm-hmm.
I do my best to not let my ego get in the way. I feel the ego really does mean easing God out. And to just sit back and be divinely guided so I can be there for my client wherever they are going.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you must find this very gratifying when you actually help a person and maybe they reach that point where they say to you, thank you very much for all your help, but I don't think I need to come see you anymore. That must be very, very good, and I would imagine a great feeling for you to experience.
That's an awesome feeling for me to experience. That's my goal, that they don't need to come anymore. Mm-hmm. Occasionally I'll hear from clients in a crisis, hey, Bendinier, just feeling things out, and then they're off again and having another adventure.
Mm-hmm. So you're always willing to listen to people and assist them wherever and whenever you can?
I do my best to.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, there's a business side, and most times if I see them in my office, I have to charge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if somebody calls me at 2 o'clock in the morning, chances are it's an emergency.
Right.
I don't get that, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I do my best to be there for my clients, however long they need me. And sometimes I do see a client for like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have someone scheduled after them, and if I know the client tends to need a little bit more time, we'll leave some flex space for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, if people wanted to, how could they get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me at 248-212-0808. They can also email me at michi@spirituallivingandhealing.com. They can also go to my website. And that's basically the way that they can get hold of me.
Mm-hmm. And what is your website?
It is spirituallivingandhealing.com.
.com. Yeah. www.spiritualliving.com.
Yes.
And in essence, that is the name of your service, right? Spiritual living?
Yes.
What is your definition of spiritual living?
Spiritually living to me means living as closely in connection and guided by divine source as possible. Living in joy and knowing that I and you are joy and love and the light. The more connected we are, I feel, the more spiritually we are living and being basically source on earth.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much for being able to do this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Thank you very much, Michi.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been great.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Right, I'm back, and I just want to thank my special guest this month, Michi LeMay. She's a clinical psychologist, a metaphysical healer. She practices many modalities, very interesting. I like the fact that we got to talk about several different things, and I think that was very interesting. I also want to thank Brandon Stevens for producing this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. And with that being said, just want to say thank you very much for listening. Come back next month. We'll be on again on the 17th of July. So be sure to come back and check out that edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I want to thank you once again for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
There's always a moment, the moment you decide to get involved, to get engaged.
This is my
American story.
When you teach someone to read, they have a sense of self-fulfillment.
Seeing family, friends fall victim to gang violence, drugs, it definitely made me want to serve.
There was a hole in the ground, and by the time we left, there was a house.
I realized that these kids were not getting a meal.
It is so easy to give back.
I don't have a lot of money to help people, but I do have something. I have time.
You can give any skill you have.
I see a great need in my community.
Just imagine how strong a society we could be.
This is Barack Obama. Every one of us has a role to play in making our communities and our country stronger. Discover yours. Help us continue to make a difference in the life of our nation. Go to serve.gov and find the opportunity that works for you. And this message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Thanks to improved home energy efficiency, the average American home uses 40% less natural gas than it did in 1970. But as a nation, we can improve and continue to reduce our carbon footprint. I'm Chris McGill of the American Gas Association. No matter what kind of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system you have in your home, you can take a few simple steps to save money and improve your home's energy efficiency. Reduce your overall energy use by up to 30% by replacing furnaces and boilers with high-efficiency appliances. Use a programmable thermostat. Set it lower in the winter and raise the dial in the summer for significant savings. And use your landscaping to your advantage. Trees and shrubs are a natural way to cool your home and reduce your bills. And finally, sealing any drafty doors or windows will reduce your home's energy use. Now is the time to make the changes to make your home more energy efficient. For more tips, visit AGA.org.
A message from the American Gas Association.
This is WHFR Dearborn.
We actually managed to get rid of a few things for a change. But every once in a while, it's a good thing to hang on to something for, say, 30 years. That's what Rayfawn Williams did. In fact, he held on to this folk melody for about 30 years before he figured out what to do with it. That's when he scored it originally for string orchestra and harp, preferably two harps. And then years later, it turned into a ballet as well. It's a gorgeous melody, and we're going to hear it in these five variations very shortly. Here's a trio sonata by Giuseppe Tartini.